Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 83 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today's show is the second half of my interview with Adam from Gardener's Tale, and I notice that since the first half of our interview went out last Wednesday, he's actually posted a video on his YouTube channel, Gardener's Tale, of pruning a summer fruit tree. So do go over there and be sure to check that out. As always, links to that will be in the show notes, and I will hopefully have included a link to that video. So make sure you go over there and check him out. Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Before we get to that interview, though, I just wanted to say that I have started releasing daily vlog videos, logs of my sort of daily activities here at the homestead. So they're now going up every day on YouTube. They're anything between 8 and 9 minutes long up to about 20 minutes long, and it just covers some of the things that I'm kind of doing day to day. Now, if any of you have been following them, please don't worry that you're going to lose out on any of the other content that you're used to, because that's certainly not the case. I'm going to be delivering all of my usual content, which is my more sort of focused videos on a topic, and the instructional videos and the plant identification videos. I'm still going to be producing them with the exact same regularity as I always did, but this new series is just running alongside it, a daily log basically of all sorts of things that I'm getting up to on my day-to-day life here, all the things I'm learning and wins and losses. So I have started to curate everything in playlists. So if you're particularly interested in the vlogs, then you can follow that playlist. And if you're not interested in the vlogs, but you just want the more focused content, then of course you can just avoid that playlist and focus on the other things that I'm making. So hopefully I'm catering to everyone there, and hopefully you find some new content that you're interested in. I'm really enjoying doing them. It certainly really focused my mind on what I'm doing and opened up lots of new areas of thought that I wasn't expecting. So it's been really worthwhile for me, for sure. Going forward, I'm going to be trying to release some of my video content a little bit earlier to Patreon subscribers. So as of right now, there is a crayfish trapping and catching video showing you how you can catch crayfish in your local rivers, how you can actually find them, and also, you know, cooking them and everything else. That video is up for Patreon subscribers, and it will be released to everybody in due course, but as just another little way of saying thank you, that's been released to Patreon subscribers a few days earlier. So thank you ever so much again, everybody, for listening. And, you know, this is me saying thank you to those Patreon subscribers for going that little bit further as well. So there you go. The final little mini announcement for this episode is to say we're on episode, I think, 82, was it I said? 82, 83, we're somewhere around that range anyway. And episode 100 is coming up. And for episode 100, we are going to be doing the Q&A. Now, I've had some questions that I've put to one side that I'm saving for the Q&A episode, but I would like a lot more. So please do get in touch with your questions. And it's basically, rather than a Q&A, it's more of an ask me anything. So, you know, nothing is off limits. There's absolutely anything you can ask me, and I will do my best to honestly answer you. And you can do that through so many different ways. You can either send us an email at selfsufficientcontact selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com. That's selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Facebook and send me a DM or just ask a question on the group. Now, I may be answering some questions on the show that I've already answered for people privately, but hopefully it's going to be a really fun episode. And the last way that you can get your questions in, and dare I say it, the best way, would be, if you're able and happy to, is to use the link in the show notes, the link right at the bottom of the sort of information part of each show, and you're able to record up to 1 minute a voicemail, and it means I can actually play it on the show and reply to your message. So those are all the ways you can get in touch. Please do that, and I very much look forward to hearing from you guys, and that's going to make up episode 100. I'm not even sure what day of the week that will fall on, but if it falls on one of the days that are sort of given a category, then they will step aside for that week and we'll do the AMA episode. So that's about it for announcements. So next up, I will pass you back over to the second part of my interview with Adam from Gardener's Tale. It's really easy for you to get in touch with us. You can do it either by sending an email to selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com or by using the link in the show notes to send us a voice message. You can send us a voice message just using your phone. You could also reach out to us on Facebook, where we have the Self Sufficient Hub group and the Self Sufficient Hub page. We're always thrilled to get your feedback, questions, or suggestions for future topics on the show. Before we move on from pruning, is there anything else you've got to sort of add to that discussion?
The only other thing I would mention is it saves you time in the long run, which I know you absolutely love.
yes, I do.
You're taking off those shoots. So you're going to have less leaves to pick up in the autumn. And with those shoots, because they're still pliable, they're still little woody whips, they can be composted. Whereas if you did that in the winter, you've got a hell of a lot more hard woody substances that are going to be burnt. And I guess with those shoots, they could be goat food.
Yeah, for me, for sure. Absolutely. And that woody, that size of stick is really, that if you left it, is that awkward size that's far less easy to become useful, because it's slightly too big, as you say, to compost, and it's not big enough to warrant coming into the house to be used on a wood burning stove, say. It's that awkward sort of size in between, isn't it, that doesn't really have much use.
Because it's obviously, it's not old enough to be that kind of hardwood that will burn. It's just it's a very sappy bark shoot, which obviously has got loads of nutrients and energy, and it's just being wasted. So yeah, that's a real key point as well.
Great. So let's get on to then pests and diseases. So what should we be looking out for at this time of year, and what should we do about them? What are the most common problems that we might come across?
Yeah, so with the kind of pests, obviously, we'll start with the largest. You're going to have all your birds that are going to be on your fruit trees. So depending on the size of your tree depends on, you know, what you can do and what you can't really do. So, you know, if you've got a huge Bramley cooking apple tree, you're not going to chuck a net over it, because, you know, you're going to end up knocking off more apples than the birds would peck at. So that's not feasible. I guess you could invest in bird scales, or, you know, make your own. You know, you could make some windmills and various things, and you could attach them within the tree, or reflective discs and things like that, put them in the tree. Maybe that will help.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I know that pigeons end up not caring. I guess they're more of the brute of the bird world.
Sure. I've got to say, I've never really found birds to be a particular problem. Now, that might just be because I am so lucky to be blessed with abundance. Whenever I think of fruit trees, there's always been more than enough for me to share. And birds haven't really been something I've personally worried about. Slightly different with things like cherries, that where they'll just strip the tree. But when I'm talking about the bigger fruit, apples and stuff, it's not something that has really ever concerned me.
Yes, I guess it depends on the location. I'm in a rural area,
Sure.
but there's a woods nearby, and crows and magpies and lots of those sort of birds will come in, quite happily sit on the tree, and peck a little bit of an apple away, and then it'll end up browning off, and then they move on to another one the next day. So yeah, it
Right.
does depend. If you've got fields around, you're not going to get a huge amount of birds, but where you've got, your woods around, I find that a little bit of an issue, on that one.
Yeah, maybe I've just been super lucky.
Maybe.
So, what other pests after
Yes,
birds?
sorry. So if we go back onto birds, you've
Oh, yeah, please.
got your nets and bits to put on your fruit trees. So if you've got, a newly established tree, you don't want a big fat pigeon sat on a branch, ending up bowing it. I've seen that on so many trees. You've got these lovely little standard apple trees or pear trees or whatever, and you get this heaping great pigeon sit on a branch, and it just weighs it down. And if that's persistently done, you'll be surprised that the tree will end up bowing the branches, which is never something you really want, because you want your tree to grow up. Or, well, that's the majority
Yeah.
of people's aspirations, isn't it? So with
Sure.
those sort of things, yeah, absolutely. Get a net around it or something. Or you can do, similar to what you've done, where you've put your stakes around, and then you could mesh the top of that stake. So yeah, mesh or netting, really. But
Yeah.
obviously your kind of smaller fruit, like your cherries, your apricots, nectarines, those sort of things. Definitely, they're going to need protection from the birds.
And would you use a fleece or something like that? How would you protect
So
those?
you want as much airflow, and you can use a fleece. I have seen it done before with cherries and things. It's not something I would do, because especially when it gets hot, you're going to create a huge wilting atmosphere in there, and
Yeah, it doesn't strike me as something that's particularly sensible in the heat of the summer.
no, and it just needs to be breathable, really, and you want the wind to get in there in bits. So also it'll be a breeding ground for other pests such as your aphids if you fleeced it. So
Yeah.
yeah, I would
Yeah.
just get the smallest mesh netting you can get, the better, usually, on those sort of things.
Yeah. And moving on from birds.
Yeah, so birds, should we go for rodents? Let's go down the scale. So
Yes.
yeah, so I can relate to rodents heavily. Urban area, I have a cherry tree, which is about 6.5 feet tall, and I've got it espaliered across a fence panel. Last year they were doing fantastic. Looking at these cherries, just in awe. Went out the
Yeah.
day I wanted to harvest, completely stripped bare, and the fact is they left the pips hanging. So they were so precise with their eating, the pips were still on the stalk, hanging on the trees. Yeah,
Wow.
gutting. But I
Yeah,
learned from that. Yeah,
absolutely.
absolutely learned from that. So this year I've put a mesh across there, so not netting, because the mice would just eat through the netting. So I've put a mesh, and it was all free. I used pallet wood for the framework, and I used
Yep.
a plaster, like a rendering plasterer's meshing that they use, because I got it out of a skip, and
Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. It's great
that
stuff.
did the tree, and it was absolutely free, because I looked online, and kind of rodent netting, it would have been about 80 quid for a roll, and I just thought, I can't justify 80 quid for 5 kilograms of cherries. Didn't sit well.
Yeah.
Even if I did it long term, it still didn't sit well. So
Sure.
yeah, I did that, and I've had no problem this year. The only thing you've got to consider is working out some sort of door mechanism, or a roll up or something like that. So it's obviously easier with net, like a fabric netting or string netting. You can flip it up, access your tree, but with obviously wire. Sharp wires harder to roll up than you think.
Yeah.
so you,
Yeah, I hear you. I
it's
hear you.
easier to make a door system or put it on a panel, and then you can just pull the panel off, and or if you screwed it in or put some wire, just I've just got wire that just holds mine in, so I don't need any tools if I ever need to access it. I just undo a wire from each corner, four corners, pull it off, access, put it back on. So yeah, that's
Sure.
my rodent experience and solution on that one.
Can find self-sufficient hub content elsewhere online in lots of other places. We have a YouTube channel, we also have our website, and now there's our Facebook page and Facebook group. Links to all of these you can find in the show notes. Come check us out.
One thing I found really useful is I use a very similar system around all of our young trees that aren't particularly established. And I tend to stake out around them and put whatever kind of mesh I can get my hands on. And that's been really useful because where I am, we get a lot of rabbit damage as well. And
Yes.
on those really young trees, they can strip the bark in, seconds and destroy all of your planting. So I've had to protect all of our young trees, and by young I mean tiny, the ones that we've put in bare root, barely a meter tall. And that's the only way I was able to stop that damage at the base.
Yes, yeah. I mean, those, that's a great solution for that, 'cause there are the rabbit guards, the plastic ones that never sit well with me. I always, if I go to a house and they've got those sort of guards on, I always go up to them to take them off because the tree's obviously at the stage where it's not going to be affected, and they just
Yeah.
shatter in your hands, and you cannot get all the bits of plastic up, and it's then embedded in the soil, and it just doesn't sit right. So I can't, I do know you can get some biodegradable ones, but yeah, I don't like those plastic spirals. They're never
No.
great. And
Well, my thinking was also that it was more of a long-term solution as well. This is something that I can sort of maintain and keep there as the tree grows.
absolutely. And also, I should have probably said this one first. Deer, if
Yeah,
you're in your
absolutely. We do
area,
get deer
yeah,
here. Yeah, we do get
you're
deer.
going to get deer that are going to go lovely, soft fruit shoots. Absolutely. I'm going to be having those ones off. And
Yeah.
the problem with deer is they're kind of they're grazers. They won't devour one tree. They'll have a nibble off every tree. And
Yes.
from that, they just tug. They don't scissorly cut. They will rip and tear, and then you end up with branches pulled off, and then that branch, where it's teared, can get infected. It's yeah. So I think that in your situation, absolutely, you've done a perfect job with that kind of tree guard, because as you say,
Yeah.
it's long term as well.
Yeah. So what else are we looking at after our bigger
Yeah.
pests?
So after those sort of large pests, it's all the kind of insects that are going to be wanting a boost, really. They're gonna, it's a hot summer's day, and they want the lovely sap from the tree. So, which is your valuable sap, which is going into your apples and obviously the leafy growth. So the main ones, really, the aphids. Especially the white aphids I find on the fruit trees. In a hot day, they can multiply into the hundreds.
Sure.
And a lot of the aphids also have the kind of ants as their protectors, because the ants will see the aphids, and as the aphids suck out the sap from the leaves, they secrete this kind of sugary little drop behind them. So the ants, think,
Yep.
lovely, I'm gonna have that, and I'm gonna protect these guys from the ladybirds. So if you see ants on the tree, the ants are not the problem. It's the aphids.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, so slight detour from the conversation, but ants on a lime tree. This is a great little foraging tip. So lime or linden trees, the leaves are edible, particularly the younger leaves in the spring. And it's great if you can find, and you will find lime trees, you find the ants, and if you can follow the line of ants to where the aphids are, and you harvest the leaves with that sort of silvery excreta on it, they're ridiculously sweet. It's like a kind of honey. So that's a little forager's secret tip for you.
That's aphid poo, delicious. That sounds absolutely brilliant.
It is. And you summed it up. Aphid poo is delicious. It's like a little honey treat of
That
poo.
sounds brilliant. No, I think that's great. Yeah, I'm sure that would be fantastic because yeah, it's pure sap, isn't it, really? It's just like honey, how honey
Yeah.
would get nectar and things, so.
Yeah, well, it's exactly it they it's can't it's not the same process, but it's kind of a similar
Yeah,
process to when you tap a tree and make syrup.
yes. Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Look out for aphid poo.
Yeah. So, aphids then, we spray with a soapy liquid
Yeah, horse the
and
horse chestnut soap.
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. And or something similar. And I love what you said earlier about how, can you explain that to me again, the how they breathe through their backs and how, because that I'd never heard that before, but it joins all the dots for me as to how the liquid
Yeah,
works.
so effectively they've got their mouth latched on similar, well, the way I believe it or understand it is similar to how a tick buries its head into your skin. So this will have its mouth effectively buried into the leaf. So it can't breathe through its mouth because it's full effectively. So
Yeah.
they've developed so their back they breathe through their back effectively. So by spraying this kind of soapy mixture on there, you're suffocating it effectively,
Yeah.
which is obviously cruel in a sense, but it does the job for the aphids. And there's a plant called I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with it, an Elaeagnus. It's a
Yeah.
hedging plant. It's a kind of more of a Mediterranean plant. But if you ever prune that, you'll see huge amounts of dust, or spores from the leaves that just cover the air. On a hot sunny day, you'll see it more, and it just mists everywhere, similar to the viburnum leather leaf has this kind of dust all over it, and you'll
Right.
never see an aphid on there.
Sure.
So
Because
yeah,
they get clogged up, I guess.
absolutely, yeah, lots of insects. There's not much that will, only more beetles would have those sort of plants because they're just so dusty. So
Sure.
yeah, they wouldn't be able to breathe. So that's another tip, really.
Yeah. Are there any pests other than aphids we should be looking out for?
On the actual trees, not
Yeah.
per se in the summer, I would say, really. That's the main kind of, well, there's actually a few gall bugs for if we, because obviously it's a quite a general topic, the fruit really, but you will have some gall bugs that will go on to your
I,
nectarines, your peaches, those sort of things.
do you know, I came across an example of a gall bug that was new to me today. I was out foraging and I came across a walnut tree with leaf mite galls. I'd not come across
Right.
those before, but yeah, I'm always fascinated by those. We've got a lot of oak trees here, so I'm obviously used to the oak gall wasp, is it called, or
Yeah,
an oak wasp
for the
gall, or
yeah, you get these kind
that
of
deform
oak
the fruit and make
apples.
oak apples. That's right. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
right.
Yeah, so
Fascinating.
that's something to look out for. But yeah, go on.
My understanding, Adam, though, is that generally speaking, the galls aren't terribly concerning unless it's a huge infestation. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, yeah, I would say so. But I would generalize that in any any pest really. If you've got a couple of pigeons or a couple of a couple
Yeah.
30 aphids or something, it's not too much to worry about. But if they're there, they're going to multiply. So I always say nip it in the bud early, get it
Yeah.
sorted so it doesn't become a big problem later. And they do deform the leaves sometimes. They'll curl themselves up and the leaves will curl up or something.
Yes.
So that's a good sign on your kind of your nectarines and bits like that, that it will curl up. So yeah, that's something that's worth looking out for.
And if we're suffering from something like that, is the treatment literally just to, pick the affected leaves by hand and dispose of them?
Yes, yeah, that would probably be the best organic approach, absolutely. To really just thoroughly go through your tree. Obviously, if you've got a huge tree, it's not going to be viable.
Sure.
But then you would want to introduce something that would act as a predator towards them. So you've got your nematodes and things like that. But I would say on the small scale, which is pretty much everyone, no one's going to have a huge nectarine tree over here. But yeah, just go through it thoroughly, pick them off. And if you can't actually get the gall bug out, just take the leaf off because it's just going to infest the others. And half the time the leaves are curled up. So I'll just take them off. And
Yeah.
I would probably avoid composting them. I would just get them burnt or, disposed of to kill the pest, really.
Sure. I suppose the one silver lining, if you like, with gall bugs is they're quite easy to spot, aren't they? Because that's how they got their name, really. A gall is a deformation that usually is quite readily visible to us.
Absolutely, yeah. It really does deform the leaves, so yeah, you're really going to just see that if you're you're vigilant and you understand your tree and you know what it should look like.
Yeah.
You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficientherb. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible.
Anything else on your list?
Well, there's obviously a few kind of worms and bits and grubs that will kind of harbor within your fruit. Some of them can be an issue, but I've never found them a huge issue, and or there's not a solution that's not an easy organic solution really, because you're going to get them no matter what, but the birds are obviously going to try and get them away.
Yeah.
So unless obviously if you've netted it, then you're going to have less chance of these sort of things coming in, but you're going to get little grubs or little worms in your apple, in your cooking apples especially. But it's simple to just cut them out. They're not going to completely destroy the fruit or anything. It's just a mere cut it out. It's similar when you get bits out, your carrots or your
Yeah,
potatoes,
yeah.
it's some, or a bruise on your fruit. It's a similar sort of problem to there.
Yeah, and if you're feeling particularly Ray Mears, you would just refer to them as mini bacons, wouldn't you?
Bit of protein in there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, what about diseases?
Yeah, so diseases at this time of year. So it is more of a winter time where you, or autumn winter time where you are going to get your sort of diseases. That's why, if you're doing a winter prune, don't do it on a rainy day, because you're more likely to spread those diseases. I would also say, actually, when you are pruning, going back to pruning,
Yeah.
do disinfect your secateurs, give them a good clean off, and make sure they're sharp. There's no excuses for a blunt pair of secateurs. It's a 2-minute job, and
Sure.
that is just crucial, because otherwise you're crushing the branches, you get dieback. Just get them sharp and clean. And
Yeah. And
if,
when you say
yep.
disinfect,
Yep.
I would think that that would be a good idea when moving from plant to plant as
Yeah,
well, would it?
absolutely. I was just about to say that. Yeah, you jumped in
Right.
front.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. Yeah, absolutely. So if you're even, you know, if it's a plant next to each other and they're both apples, just give them a wipe off. You don't know. So give them a good clean and make sure that they're still sharp, obviously, from the last one. But yeah, always from transferring from tree to tree, make sure that they're disinfected. I know it's a bit of a laborious task and you think, oh, what's the point? But there's that one time when you cut it and you infect it, and then you think, oh, that's probably the point. You know,
Yeah,
it's worth doing.
sure. So, is there anything else you wanted to add in to the stuff we've sort of already spoke about before we draw a line under it?
I think that's pretty much everything I can think of off the top of my head. Merely to summarize, you know, key thing, make sure your tree's happy and healthy. Looking at it, making sure it's watered, and it's you know, the leaves aren't wilting or anything like that. Moving on to pruning, make sure you give it a prune. However, something I will add to that is not every tree will need a prune. If you've just put a tree in that autumn, you may not have any growth on there, so it won't need pruning. Whereas
Sure.
if, for say, you had a big branch that had fallen out of your tree the winter before, that's going to spur a huge amount of growth because it's kind of given the tree a kickstart. So then that's even more crucial. Similar to if you do a heavy prune in the winter, you must follow up with a summer prune. Otherwise, all that heavy pruning would have been wasted because it's just going to put on loads of growth for you to do a heavy prune in the winter again. So
Sure.
the summer prune is for shape, it's for airflow, and it's for fruit, really.
Yeah.
The whole aim of it is to retain the shape and make sure that fruit is as best as it can be.
Great. Great. I suppose the only thing I would just quickly add, and it doesn't really add anything to the conversation we've had, but it works as an adjunct to it, I think, is generally speaking, and this isn't just trees, this is all of our plants, but before we start looking up in our books, you know, what sort of diseases and what sort of pests do we need to worry about for plants X, Y, and Z, that the fundamentals kind of tell us that you know, the first thing is just general plant health, because the healthier a plant is, and if it's got availability of all the nutrients it needs and everything else, it's going to do far better at staving off those pests and diseases without our intervention, isn't it? So just general plant health is always something that should be, you know, included in our considerations.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree with that point more. You know, the healthier you are, the more likely you are to fight off any, you know, diseases and pests, really. So yeah, but so by doing this, you are, you know, improving it year on year. And then, you know, if you do have an incident where something happens and you lose part of the tree, or you know, you've still got the other half that's gonna retain and thrive and fill in from where you've lost that growth there. And similarly, if you if you are pruning in the summer, you don't need to prune everything that's growing, because if you want to retain a branch to fill in a gap or expand the tree, then don't prune it. You don't need, if you've got a branch and you think, actually, do you know what, I'd like it to be a little bit taller there, then leave it. Don't always bring it back to those three buds. It'll harden off, and then on the next year you can on the next year in the summer, you can prune it back to get that fruiting spur and get that system going on that branch, if that makes sense.
Yeah, have a reason for each cut you're making.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. If you can't justify why you've cut that or why you haven't cut that, then don't cut
Yeah,
it.
sure.
Another quick one is at the base of a tree, you sometimes get these kind of water shoots. Well, actually,
Suck
they're on
suckers,
this.
I would call them.
Yeah,
Is that
you
right?
get, yeah, American terminology is water shoots. Yeah, I
Okay.
guess. Yeah, no, I'm not American though, but yeah.
That's all right.
From
They
the side
exist. They do
of
exist.
the tree, yeah, you get your suckers, your water shoots. And at the
Yep.
base of the tree, it's called epicormic growth, which are shoots, which are usually stress shoots. So it will give you a bit of a, it's a bioindicator to see if your tree's happy or not. If you've got loads of these shoots at the base, You need to go, hang on a minute, he's not happy, or it's not a happy tree. Take them off and then think of the things that you're not doing, and then correct that and do those things to make sure that you don't get those epicormic shoots next year.
That's fascinating. I never heard that before. So I suppose it makes perfect sense. Now I'm kind of thinking about it as we're talking about it, but I suppose it's the tree. Is it the tree hedging its bets, just in case the bulk of the tree dies back? I'm not sure. I don't feel confident in myself, so I'd better send these up. Is that what it's doing?
Yeah, so it's effectively going, if I lose bits up there, so if you've had a heavy prune, that may be a sign why you've got epicormic growth. So in that case, you don't need to, if you've done a heavy prune in the winter, if you see tree surgeons when they pollard trees, London planes and things, you see that all these shoots come up from the base as well.
Yeah.
That's because you've kind of just stressed it out a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a sign that is saying, if I lose the top, I've still got all these leaves to bring in nutrients, from the sunlight and bits.
Sure.
And yeah, it's the same when you see an ash tree cut to the, you cut it down to the stump, and then people say, oh, it's still growing. They're the epicormic shoots.
Yeah. So is there ever a bad time to cut the suckers?
Throughout the year, or
Yeah,
are you
throughout the
saying?
year. Yeah, is there a bad time of year to do that?
Well, it's best to just nip them off as early as you see those kind of shoots that are on the trunk there.
Yeah.
And if you, instead of cutting them, because if you cut them, sometimes they can shoot back again. You can just pinch them if they're very young and soft.
Yeah.
And you can take what's called like a heel out of there. So you pinch it and pull it out, and then that will just heal over, and it won't come back again. I guess if you have the epicormic ones, that's not always achievable because it can be that there's too many.
Yeah, so the epicormic growth is that growth that's coming from more the root area.
That's correct.
Yeah.
The basal section of
Yeah.
the tree. Yeah, and then
Yeah.
the suckers will be on the trunk or any main branches that aren't off a lateral branch, or it's not
Okay.
off another branch, it's on the main stem or
Sure.
trunk stem branches, that sort of area.
Cool. So is there any bad time to take the epicormic growth away?
Well, I would say on a rainy day in the winter,
Yeah.
that's not the right time. You're going to get diseases, airborne diseases in there. But I would say those sort of things you want to get off. Well, first of all, see it's got those, and then try and address that issue. And as you're addressing that issue, you can take those guys off, any time of the year. There's no harm in that because
Sure.
effectively that's wasted energy. You've got to look at your tree as an energy source, and it's only got a limited amount that it can get that year. So you want to put all of that into whatever you want out of the tree. If you want it to be a bigger tree, you put it into the growth. If you want more fruit, you put it into the fruit. So by eliminating these water shoots or suckers as on the trunks, it enables more energy to go into the other aspects of the tree.
Sure. Awesome. Okay, Adam, I think I'm gonna wrap us up there. But before we go, do you want to just let people know where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got a YouTube channel and Instagram page called Gardener's Tale. It's fairly new, so bear with, but I will be uploading videos regularly on kind of how-tos on gardening. I do have one on summer prunings on an apple tree, so that will be uploaded in the next week or so. So if you want to find out a little bit more information, or actually see it on a hands-on, if you work better by seeing it physically, then
Yeah.
please do have a look, and check it out. That'd be great.
Well, that's great, Adam. And obviously, I will provide links to these in the show notes for this episode. So, once again, Adam, thank you so much for your support of what I'm doing here. And thank you so much for your time in this interview. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm sure the first of many.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I do appreciate that.
Pleasure. Pleasure.
If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.